activate the view screen, and turn on your universal translators, because it is time for another Galactic Netcast.
3, 2, 1, here we go. Stand by.
Interrupt this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
This could be the beginning of the end for the human race. Human beings cower before the onslaught of these unearthly enemies.
It is Thursday, the 10th day of October, 2013, and welcome to another Galactic Netcast. This is the Alien Invasion number 85. From Waterloo, Iowa, I'm Dave, Jamie Nelson. Jamie. Joining me this evening from Wausau, Wisconsin, is Brad, Alistair Ludwig, and Anessa Zoe Moyens. That's a hard combination, Anessa. Zoe Moyens, a lot of E's and O's and E's and Y's.
You're welcome.
That was Brad's doing.
Oh, okay. Explain. Explain yourself, mister.
It's going to tie into a story that we're going to have later on. And these are all names of companions of the second Doctor.
Bum, bum, bum.
You just teased something, a big thing. In fact, this story is so big that it is bridging two podcasts this evening. We're going to talk about it as well on the time traveling robots in space. That's how big this story is.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So let's get. Hey, what? Huh?
And it also I don't want to give anything away. Okay.
We'll talk about it.
So what's the show about?
Oh, the show. Thank you for asking, Anessa, and welcome. The show is about aliens, the kind that you see on TV, in movies, and video games, books, and then, of course, the real kind of aliens that are potentially out there somewhere in the galaxy.
And puppies and kittens.
And puppies and kittens. That have a xenomorph inside them that pops out of their chest.
That's horrifying.
It's kind of gross.
Well, it's happened.
Mew. Nobody wants to.
I want to eat your face.
Sorry.
All right.
Maybe that's why the landlord has a no pet policy.
All right. So.
Puppies and kittens could explode.
Yeah, you never know.
Xenomorphs popping out of them.
Yep.
Maybe.
Okay.
That's so nasty.
Let's get down to business here. We talk about aliens in different ways. Of course, the news. We do the creature feature. That's the spotlight of a certain kind of alien and our picks for the week. For the audio subscribers, you can watch us live on video, either live Thursday nights at whatever time we can do it when we don't have technical issues, or you can watch us later on YouTube, youtube.com/galacticnetcast. So let's get the show, let's get this thing going here, and we start every week with this.
In the news.
Bradley, you have story number one.
That I do. Extraterrestrial life. Good or bad news?
Good news.
What say you, Anessa?
I'll go with bad news.
Fair enough.
You're just saying that despite me, aren't you?
Gotta balance things out. Gotta have an opposing side.
The devil and the angel. Well, good news, bad news.
We're actually going to talk about a book called Civilizations Beyond Earth. Okay. And it poses the question, is there life beyond Earth? And how will the human race, specifically our media, react if there is? Civilizations Beyond Earth, Extraterrestrial Life and Society, which will be released as a paperback this month, is a collection of essays that address the plausible possibility that we are not alone in the universe. And it talks about the paradox within our high-tech information society. SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, is getting stronger and smarter. You know, our our technology, our computers are faster, can process more data, more information, and we can search the skies much faster than we could before. So they're eagerly anticipating the day when they can release news of their discovery to the world. But, you know, in recent years, the mass media has undergone what they say is a catastrophic transformation. With the economic problems and the technological revolutions that have eroded serious journalism for the past decade, and it's producing a strange media environment that cannot accurately report on the world immediately around it. Expecting clear, accurate, and fair reporting on worlds beyond our own, and we can't even do it on ours, would be beyond us and even more challenging. And the mass media has gutted its capabilities in science reporting to the extent that some media outlets cannot distinguish between science and quackery. And I think we've seen some YouTube videos of people coming out and saying, hey, check this out, and it's complete and utter made-up crap.
Yeah, no, people will believe anything they see on the internet, and that's the problem, you know?
Yep.
There's no credible person. There's no Walter Cronkite that everybody tunes in to watch at, you know, 5:30, 6:30 Eastern time.
The other thing, too, is, like, a lot of people don't have cable anymore, so they don't regularly watch the evening news or anything like that. And it's like you see something on the internet and people just take it at face value without double checking the sources to be like, well, is anybody else talking about this? Is this for real? And so then you just get like this big chain reaction, and then you get other people that are like, no, it's not true.
Yeah.
But by that point, it's too late.
My advice to people is if they see something on the internet that they're not sure, if Snopes. It sounds kind of wacky, Snopes.com, Snopes.com. They research – they have people that research lots of varying subjects, and it's a good balanced resource that isn't biased in any way that I've seen.
So, Brad, there was a survey involved in this story, right?
Yes, there was, and it revealed that the general public is noticing that there's an overall decline in news media and is switching off. And like Anessa was saying, it's reducing audiences and revenues even further, which perpetuates a cycle. They can't keep a reporting staff on because they can't afford the reporting staff because people aren't watching and spending money on the advertisers that are paying to keep their doors open.
And on a local angle, Brad – I see that with local media, because I work for a radio station, we have zero staff. So if something happens in the middle of the night, we don't have anybody at the station to cover it. So if an alien invasion happened at 3 a.m., there's nobody going to be on the radio to report it.
You'd get scooped.
Yeah.
So this vicious cycle is really kind of tearing apart the ability for media to get the word out, and also people are kind of being programmed that the news that they do get is crap anyway. So people are kind of tuning that part out. So the potential for misreporting on SETI stuff especially is increasing. So this rise of social media, which is largely unedited and mostly anarchic – ooh, what? Anarchic. I love that word. It kind of adds a potential to bad stories, which we were just talking about before, and you really need to research stuff before you start copying and pasting anything. But things that are worded to be spectacular and most likely misleading often go viral. So you've got this huge amount of misinformation that gets spread rather quickly through social media.
Can I jump in real quick?
And, absolutely.
And I fell prey to this week, and it's something that I posted on the Galactic Netcast social feeds, and I have to apologize for it because I did not do my research. Anessa, you know what I'm talking about, right? That NASA thing, that NASA so-called press conference.
I didn't see if you actually posted it to Galactic Netcast. I saw that you had posted it on your wall, and so I posted the article saying that
this
is not a legit link.
Okay, that's right. Yes.
And to tie this all up here, I posted something as well about what it actually was.
I didn't see that.
Oh boy.
I just saw, like, I was on Twitter and I follow Phil Plait and he had this article that he posted up and I'm like, Dave posted something about this. And I checked to see the Galactic Netcasts, and I didn't see it there. I just saw it on your news feed.
Okay.
And so I thought, well, let me go ahead and post it here at Galactic Netcasts, just in case anybody else comes across it and think, like, oh, hey, NASA's got this big thing going on. Well, no, they don't. They're shut down. But beyond that, it's like, no, it's not even a NASA website.
Okay, go ahead.
No, Phil did his update on October 4th, and I figured I would just go sneak a peek and see what that site was all about. And I posted on the website, if you click the magic yellow button on the site, you're going to see a purple ninja.
Can you explain exactly what that said initially, either one of you? The
website?
Yeah, the website.
Initially said that NASA had this major announcement that was going to change everybody's worldview or something like that. And it was supposed to be on October 13th or 16th, and then it was bumped to, like, October 10th. And, like, if you look at the website, it's not even a .gov website. Yeah. And apparently it's based out of... was it South America or something, maybe? I don't remember. Yeah. Some other country. And Phil Plait actually did a really good job of pointing out everything that would indicate that it's not a legitimate NASA website. So it's like, just be wary if you go to this site. So yeah, I figured I would post that for everybody to see, so that way, just in case.
I figured I would be the brave explorer and go in and check it all the way out.
Thank you, Brad.
And you got a purple ninja.
And this just proves that anybody can fall prey to this, and it also proves the point that you should check your URLs. Check. don't believe anything that you see. That's what we're saying here.
And also, if you're going to go with a marketing firm, make sure they don't do stupid things like they did there. Because that was really, really dumb.
Oh, it was a
Was the purple ninja for anything, or it was just a purple ninja?
No, it was a guy singing a song that he's a purple ninja. It's a rap song. It's a bad rap song.
So this was it was a company that did this that for advertising, or what? No, okay.
I don't know the name of the firm or whatever, but it's this dude. It's a YouTube video. You click the yellow button, and it takes you to the YouTube video of this guy singing a really crappy rap song about being a purple ninja.
God, the internet is so good and so bad at the same time.
It's a great deal of build-up for a big poo sandwich. Yeah. That's all I can say about that.
So is there anything more on this story?
So it just kind of goes on and maps out there's a lot of problems with the media as it stands right now as a whole. There's not enough good scientific reporters. There's not enough quality information, and we as a people have kind of tuned out media because we expect garbage anyway. So that's what the book is about. If aliens actually came, how would it actually play out?
Oh, my God.
And that's what the individual essays are for.
This would be a great, like, either short film or full-length film. Of, like, what if an alien invasion happened and nobody believed it? Because we're all just so jaded and we don't believe anything that we see on the internet anymore.
I counter that with World War Z. A great book, kind of an anthology setup, and the movie is nothing to do with the book.
No, they just share the same title.
But the movie was good. I liked the movie.
No, it wasn't a bad movie. As long as people know that when they go see the movie or whenever they rent the movie or whatever at this point, that they know that it's absolutely nothing to do with the book.
Just think of the movie as a companion of the book or vice versa.
Whatever it's not even a companion.
Well, I mean, it takes place in the same universe, right? Sort of?
They're not even the same zombies, like, at all.
Okay.
Like, not even the same type of zombies. I mean...
It was inspired by...
That's exactly. It was inspired by, and that was about it.
Okay, all right.
It's like their commonality would be the title, and they have zombies, and they're not even the same type of zombies.
Hmm.
And they at least, I guess, traveled or whatever. So there were different cities that were shown in the film that were included in the book, but they weren't even like the same stories or anything. So,
okay. I didn't know it was that different. I knew it was different, but I didn't think it was that different.
No. And Max Brooks even said, when asked, he goes, if there were to be a zombie apocalypse, do you think that there would be fast zombies or slow zombies? And Max is like, there's no such thing as fast zombies. And in his book, he wrote about slow zombies. And the movie has fast zombies.
WTF.
LOL.
So, OMG. But yeah, and that's what I remember him talking about last year when he came to UNT. Because a lot of people asked him questions about the book and zombies in general. Because that's what you do. It's Max Brooks. But yeah.
Okay.
Totally not the same thing.
Okay.
I want to apologize, Dave. This next story is kind of beefy, but it's kind of a big deal.
Well, okay. I have a lot of context because I've been following this story since Sunday when the news broke. I was actually at the church where I grew up in. I was at coffee hour after the service, and I looked at my Facebook or Twitter or Google Plus feed, and I saw this, and I got so excited, and I've just been following this story all week long because there was rumors first that this was a legitimate thing, but then there was other rumors saying it's not legitimate. Then the BBC scheduled a news conference earlier in the week, then they postponed it, and then they rescheduled it. So there was it's been a beefy story to follow.
I will pose a question to you after you read the story and everybody gets the details, because after I read this, I went, huh.
Okay. All right. I can't wait for that follow-up to that. So, okay. So they had a – okay. Let me just read the story the way it is, because I'm going to get all discombobulated if I don't. Exclusive trailer for the newly found Doctor Who story, Web of Fear. BBC Worldwide North America announces that a stash of BBC master tapes from the 1960s featuring missing episodes of Doctor Who have been recovered in Nigeria, Africa. The BBC has remastered the tapes, and it's making the two stories, The Enemy of the World and The Web of Fear, now available exclusively on iTunes. You can go right now to iTunes.com/Doctor Who and order these, buy these episodes. 11 Doctor Who episodes were discovered, 9 of which have not been seen for 46 years by Philip Morris, who has, that's an awesome name.
I know. he finished his Marlboro, and then
it doesn't seem real. It doesn't, you know, it almost sounds made up. Like if you were to read this story without any context, thinking it's maybe a made up story, you would think it's made up just because of that name.
And with a name like that, you'd think either private detective or Tobacco Tycoon.
Yes,
okay, continue.
So Philip Morris, he's the director of Television International Enterprise Archive. He tracked records of tape shipments made by the BBC to Africa for transmission back in the 1960s because they shipped out. I learned a lot about this on a podcast I listened to recently. What they did back in the 1960s is the BBC would broadcast the episode, and then they would ship out the tapes to affiliates all around the world, because this is before like satellite transmissions and all that stuff. So he basically tracked these. Hang on one second. He tracked records of tape shipments, and Mora says the tapes had been left gathering dust in a storeroom at a TV relay station in Nigeria. And he said, "I remember wiping the dust off the masking tape on the canisters, and my heart missed a beat as I saw the words, Doctor Who. When I read the story code, I realized I'd found something pretty special." BBC Worldwide has remastered these episodes, so they've had them for a while. without telling anybody. That must have been the biggest secret to try to keep.
Yep.
They remastered them, and they're now available on iTunes. The first recovered story, The Enemy of the World, is a 6-episode tale, which first aired on the BBC in December 1967. The story features Patrick Troughton as both the Second Doctor and his antagonist, Ramon Salamander, alongside companions Jamie, Fraser Hines, and Victoria, Deborah Walting. So there's
Watling.
Watling, okay. Episodes 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6 had previously been missing from the BBC archives, and they were returned by Morris. Also recovered is the 1968 6-episode story, The Web of Fear, also starring Patrick Troughton, alongside Fraser Hines, Deborah, how do you pronounce it again?
Watling.
Watling. The story introduces Nicholas Courtney for the first time as Colonel Lethbridge Stewart. He later returns as Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart. Episodes 2 through 6 were feared lost, but new episodes 2, 4, 5, and 6 had been recovered, with episode 3 still missing. The restoration team has reconstructed this part of the story using a selection of 37 images that were still available from that episode, along with the original audio, which had been restored. So, Beth Clearfield, Senior Vice President, Digital Distribution and Business Development, says, for many, this will be the first time to see these long-lost Doctor Who stories. We're thrilled to partner with iTunes in bringing these missing gems back to new and long-time fans after all these years. So 46 years, nobody has seen these episodes, and they're back. So what's
available
your...
for $10?
Is that? Oh yeah, there's no price in this story. Is that what it
yeah,
is?
Yeah, they're $10 for the
for each
two stories.
The what are they called?
The collection of each one.
All right. Okay.
So it's not like per episode or anything. It's just like all the. Just think of it as like a season.
Yeah.
Would they? So, but yeah, it's $10 a piece because I went on the iTunes to check.
So, at first, when this story first broke, the word was it was like 100 episodes that were recovered.
Yeah, it was like 106, and now it's like, oh, there's 11 episodes.
Yeah. I think they're holding out. I think they've got more episodes. They just haven't restored them yet.
After seeing this, that they actually restored those episodes, the original story is we just found these in Nigeria, and now a week later, hey, we've got these fully restored versions of these episodes. And there is a I'm actually going to pull this up here so you can take a look at this. They put together a full-sized trailer, so they fully restored these episodes, and that's got to take a lot of time and a lot of resources. And at the end of this, I'm going to jump ahead because they actually show you, here's the original, and you have to be watching the video to see this. Here's the original. There's the cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
There are all sorts of horizontal lines going through there. They've restored the contrast. it looks beautiful.
Yep.
And that all takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're about to celebrate how many years of Doctor Who?
50.
Exactly. So now they've got this huge media extravaganza. So they must have had these probably since January.
No. You know what? Even before that, because the same podcast that I learned about how they destroyed the tapes or how they sent them out to all these different places around the world, these mm-hmm. guys have been hearing these rumors since like 2010. So I think they've had these tapes longer. I think they've had them for a couple of years, to tell you the truth.
So your thought that maybe they're definitely holding out and they're going to be releasing more definitely holds a lot of water then.
I think maybe they've only had them since like January or whatever. I think they have had to negotiate with this guy. I think this guy made some serious bucks off of these. I think he sold them to the BBC. They paid a lot of money for them.
Well, if this is a Nigerian station that was still the BBC is owned by the government.
Well, not necessarily. It's not necessarily a BBC station anymore.
Oh, okay.
It's been a long time. I think the BBC still has affiliates around the world, but that may be a private radio or TV station now. You never know.
Yeah, well, that's very true. I hadn't thought of that.
I think someday the whole story on this will come out.
So, yeah, I saw this story when I was prepping the show. It had only been – this story had only come out 31 minutes before.
Yep.
So this is hot off the presses here. So.
I was watching the social networks all day because I knew this press conference was going on. And then – well, the press conference had – it was at 3:30 Central Time, our time. And then at midnight, they because all the reporters that were at this press conference, they had to sign a what do you call it, where they can't talk until after midnight.
A gag order,
yes, a gag order.
Something. I don't know.
Yeah,
I just like using gag order.
Non-disclosure. Yeah.
Non-disclosure. Well, I like gag order.
Gag's better. Yeah, definitely. All right, so yeah, exciting stuff, and we'll talk about this again on our next podcast, The Time Traveling Robots in Space. And I have a prediction. Me and Anessa will do the majority of the talking. Matt is filling in for Paul this week, and even if Paul was still on the podcast, he would also be zoning out. Neither of those guys are a big fan or even know anything about Doctor Who, so it's going to be Anessa and I doing most of the talking, or it's going to be Matt making fun of us with his beer in his hand.
Probably.
You know what? All you have to do is tell them that they did make a Doctor Who video game.
Yes. Okay. That'll be the way to hook them. Get them in. All right. All right. So we want to know your thoughts on this. Do you also agree that the BBC is holding out on us? That they've got all these old tapes being restored as we speak? Well, let us know. Give us feedback. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com. It'll be nice to get an actual email, not from somebody that's trying to scam us, because that's a very public email address. And I, on a daily basis, I get somebody's, I have an investment for you, or I have, you've won some sweepstakes or whatever. So it'd be nice to get an actual real email instead of those. GalacticNetcasts@gmail.com, or call our voicemail number. That is 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Any kind of feedback, negative or positive. I don't like the YouTube comments. Those are the only things that I don't like. I'm sure if you would give us a constructive comment of some sort on our YouTube channel, that'd be nice. But again, we get the typical YouTube comments like "stupid"
or "aliens probed my bum."
Yeah. So yeah, leave us some constructive feedback. That would be great. All right, let's do our third and final story in the news. Anessa, what do you got for us?
Two UFOs in NASA photos have the word "unidentified" in their URL, or URL.
URL.
And so some people think that because the word "unidentified" in the address to these images, this means that they are, in fact, like UFOs, not of this world. So the date of discovery was back, well, I guess this month. And they found it on the NASA archives. And NASA doesn't really process their images in the archives. A lot of people take their images and then do their post-processing, like enhancing and whatnot. So these are supposedly the raw images. And if you look at these images, they're described as having being glowing disks, and they have a mist-like aura around them, much how millions of eyewitnesses' accounts describe them. They glow blue, much like the eyewitness accounts in the past have described. I'm not sure who these eyewitnesses are. But what you aren't thinking about is that these two glowing UFOs are very close to the NASA module, watching the NASA mission and letting them know not only are humans not alone in space, but it belongs to them. I assume them being the UFOs. And Brad has it up on his screen. Looking down towards Earth is what it looks like.
They don't even look real.
No, they don't. And the reason why it wasn't, you know, the in the news article from the UFO sightings website, it crops it in a way that you don't see this area over here to the right, to the left, which looks like either a line in a processing tape or something weird happened with this negative. Because looking at this, and this is color film too, if something presses against the film as it's being processed, the chemicals don't necessarily touch that area entirely. So it might rub off some of the emulsion, or it will affect it for sure. And it would probably do something like this. Because if you look at this, it's like in a line, almost a direct line from the other, from each other.
And those glowing orbs, they almost look like infrared, the way they're colored, you know?
Yeah.
Sort of.
I can see that.
It looks like a film processing error to me. And I had a year and a half of black and white photography, so I've seen my share of at least black and white blunders that I've done processing film.
Brad, when you talk about that, you must use your old man voice.
Back in my day, I used to process black and white film and make pretty pictures. And I had to use developer and all sorts of nasty chemicals that are probably giving me cancer right now.
I love that. Anything more to this story, Nessa?
Honestly, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, pretty skewed.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like I said, because NASA has included unidentified in the link, the people who discovered this automatically assume that these are extraterrestrials in their flying craft.
That could mean anything. Unidentified could mean anything. I have an unidentified stain on my carpet.
I don't even want to know.
Right.
It's aliens. They were here.
Not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
Wait. I'm not saying it was aliens, but it was aliens.
I got that reference. I got it. That guy.
Giovanni.
That was very much a visual joke. Yeah. So if you are watching the video portion of the show, you missed me doing my pseudo impression, at least with my hair.
Right. And their other argument that these things are legit is the fact that the photos that we were looking at are not meant for the public to see, supposedly. But instead, NASA gave a large number of its old archive to ASU, or I guess Arizona State University, for students to study and examine. And I guess because they have these images that have these probable developing errors, they're claiming that NASA forgot to check all the photos. And so they let some of the, quote, alien evidence slip by to the Arizona State University students.
I have a great analogy. Okay. This is exactly like, okay, we all have Google Plus, right? There's a feature on Google Plus where it's like an automatic upload of your photos. I forget exactly what it's called. But when you take photos, like on your phone, they'll automatically update to your or upload to your Google Plus account. They won't go live. You only make them live when you want them. So anything that you took will upload to Google Plus. And I think this is a good analogy that basically they're putting all these pictures up on their archives. They're not like us where we go through and go, oh, this one's a good one, that one's a bad one, this one's a, you know, they're just putting everything up there. So even with the faults on them, that's what they're seeing.
Well, yeah, because the amount of images that NASA takes on a probably daily basis is huge. It's a huge amount. It's a lot of data. Mm-hmm. And that's why they're starting to crowdsource a lot of things, like with the Zooniverse project, where they have people like actually go through and try to identify different characteristics of galaxies, and so that way they can get them categorized, because there's just so much that they have. There's a lot of information and not enough manpower to go through it. So
human power. Don't just call
it manpower. They're using human power. Well, right now they're not using a whole lot of power.
Yeah, that's true. I was. can I mention something? And I forgot to throw this comment in when we were talking about that first story, about how if aliens actually arrive, or if we find out that there are aliens in the universe, you know, this is going to go along party lines. You guys know that, right? You know how, what we see like in Congress right now, trying to get the budget. Between the president and Congress.
It's the Republicans' fault that aliens are here. It's the Democrats' fault that the aliens invaded.
It's exactly how it's going to go. Exactly.
I'm hoping, I'm going to be optimistic that if aliens were to ever invade, that the different parties would throw aside their differences and actually try to talk about something and talk through without going, I'm not going to negotiate, whichever side it is that's making the claims.
Partisan politics is going to be our undoing. It's going to be the reason why the aliens are going to condemn the Earthlings. You guys are no good. We're going to just kill you all and start over.
Well, I mean, it's not even like our politics. It's just the world in general. Look at all the crap that humans have done that's awful.
Yeah,
I mean, they're not going to single out Republicans and Democrats to destroy the world.
Yeah, I was a little over.
Look at all this crap that y'all have done to each other, and you guys continue to do. Like,
perhaps they'll have like a game show, like a Wheel of Destruction, and just spin it and go. And
so instead of like the Wheel of Morality, it would be like the Wheel of Destruction. Turn.
All right.
Tell us the country that we should burn.
Wow. I was just going to say that. Bam.
You guys are spending way too much time with each other. All right, so we have a bonus story here. I found this right before the podcast began, and I was very excited to read it. Stargate veteran, writer, hang on one second. I can't read my own writing. Stargate veteran writes show about aliens who bring their war to Earth. Were you just mocking me? Were you making fun of me, Brad?
No, I was trying to help you out. And felt like if I...
He was like the little moving dot.
If I was the dab, I figured if I do the bouncing dot thing that you would just go right through it, and sure enough, it worked.
Yes.
Bam.
Thank you. I saw you in my peripheral. Carl Binder was a writer on Stargate SG-1 and Stargate Atlantis, and now he signed up as showrunner and writer of the pilot for a new Canadian show called... Now, I haven't figured out how to pronounce this. Do you guys have a guess?
Echoes.
Okay. All right. I guess I've never seen echoes spelled before. That's weird.
Huh.
That's the plural of echo.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, that's what I've seen echo spelled before, but not echoes. Okay. So in the show, the two groups of aliens bring their war to Earth. So basically, they ran out of places to fight on their own turf. So they're bringing it to ours. According to The Hollywood Reporter, Echoes already has a Canadian network lined up to develop the series, and the producers are looking for broadcasters in other countries. Now, this would go in line with the whole Stargate thing, because Stargate was produced in Canada. I don't know if it was produced by a Canadian company, but that's where it was filmed. And there's a long storied history of films or shows being filmed in the Great White North, X-Files as one example.
A lot of shows are... Smallville was recorded there. Yep. A lot of shows.
There's that continuum...
Battlestar Galactica.
Battlestar Galactica.
Psych. Uh-huh, yeah.
Continuum, that new one. That's actually a Canadian show distributed here in the States. Or wherever you are in the world. We don't necessarily just have people in the States listening to us. We're worldwide. So, yeah, something to look forward to. Another alien invasion show. That gives us more content to talk about. So, yay.
Whoop, whoop.
Indeed.
All right. You guys ready for our next feature here?
Maybe.
What would that be?
You ready, Brad?
I think so.
Okay, here we go.
And now it's time for Creature Feature.
Scares me every time I hear that. All right, Brad, Creature Feature, what'd you pick this week?
We are going to talk about an alien race from the Marvel Universe.
Yes!
Called the Brood.
You took me up on my offer every time that you do the Creature Feature. Pick it from a comic. Yes.
Yes. So the Brood, which really they premiered in X-Men, and it would have been about March of 1982 is when they first appeared in X-Men number 155. This is during the time that the writer of the comic, Chris Claremont, was running it, and they only had one X-Men title at that point in time. Now there's like 100. And the artist at that time was Dave Cockrum. These two are like the – when you think about the history of the X-Men post like Kirby drawing it and Stan Lee writing it, you think of Claremont and Cochran were the two big guys. So they put together this storyline and they created – and of course – now I want you to think about the date, 1982, okay? The Brood possess wings, fang teeth, and a stinging tail. They have a hive mentality and mindlessly follow a queen. To reproduce, they must infect other races with their eggs. Does it ring any bells?
Alien.
Ring any bells?
Xenomorphs.
Yes. And I'm going to share a picture with you as to what the Brood look like. And if you're we'll probably have the link in the show notes. And if you're watching the YouTube video, you can now see what the Brood look like.
They really do look like xenomorphs.
Yes, they do. They've got the, you know, the extended length to the head, the huge jaws, the whole creepy look to them. So let's get back to this here. Oops. I'm still sharing my screen, aren't I? There we go. So, according to Dave Cockrum, the Brood were originally conceived to serve as a generic subordinates to the main villain of Uncanny X-Men number 155. We had Deathbird in this particular story, and Chris had written into the plot miscellaneous alien henchmen.
Nice.
So I had drawn Deathbird standing in this building under construction, and I just drew the most horrible-looking thing I could think of next to her. Deathbird is actually a part of another alien race called the Shi'ar. But there'll be a pick for another day.
The Tail Shi'ar?
No.
No, okay.
The Brood are sadistic creatures that enjoy the suffering and intentionally cause others, especially the terror their infection causes their hosts. They have been compared to demons. The Brood have a civilization based on the typical communal insect societies, such as those of bees and ants. The queens are the absolute rulers, while the sleazoids, quote-unquote, do all the work. Despite their evil, they never rebel against their queens, perhaps due to the latter's telepathic abilities. However, the queens have no allegiance to each other. They have also developed or stolen advanced technology. Their true planet of origin is unknown. They arrived to the Shi'ar galaxy long ago and began infesting many worlds, becoming deadly enemies to the Shi'ar. In this galaxy, they found certain large space-dwelling creatures, you know, kind of like the ship in Farscape.
Okay.
They have intelligent creatures that they use as living starships. They include the whale-like Akanti and the shark-like Star Sharks. the Brood use a virus that eventually kills – oh, I'm sorry – that eventually lobotomizes the creatures. Then they use bionics to control them. The Brood hollow out part of the creatures by eating them and use the space created to live in like termites eating a tree.
This eventually
kills the living ships, requiring them to capture new ones. Kind of gross.
Yeah, it is gross.
So there are four classifications of the brood-like creatures. Okay. There's the broodlings. They are brown,
cute,
like the image that I just posted. Nearly the size of a human and have transparent wings. Broodlings have flexible abdomens that they need to coil most of the time. They have an image on their forehead crest, though no meaning is known from symbol to symbol. So they have different symbols on the top of their huge sloping heads like the xenomorphs. They are nicknamed Sleazoids by Kitty Pryde, who is she's played by God, I wanted to say Anna Paquin, but it wasn't.
In which X-Men movie?
Shadowcat. Kitty Pryde. Oh, my God. I just lost my geek cred right now.
No, it's okay, because neither I or Anessa have any idea. We wouldn't be any help.
Ellen Page is the actress that portrays her.
And that was in
the X-Men movies.
The last, just the last one, or the ones, or no?
She was only in X-Men 3.
Okay, all right.
Yep. Okay. Most infected hosts become broodlings. So what ends up happening is you get hit by a stinger, kind of like in I can't remember the name of a damn thing tonight. Slither. So you get stung, and it injects an egg into a person, and then that egg burrows into you and slowly starts to take over your body. They become broodlings then, and that's you get infected by an embryo. Firstborn, which are pure brood, they're born directly from hatched eggs and subservient to their mother, the Empress, only. They are black, green, and red in color. And they are roughly the size of human, but smaller than a queen. There's the brood queens, looking like the broodlings, but slightly larger than humans. The queens are much rarer and infect hosts for the brood hive. Queens fulfill the mental command of the Empress, a unique alien who houses the hive mind. Queens can communicate with their spawn by telepathy across interstellar distances, even.
Wow.
The Empress, who houses the brood's hive mind, is green with minor black and red colors. There's only one Empress at a time, and she is massive. And that is the brood.
Sounds like the Borg, sort of.
Well, they definitely have... I read this, and I'm kind of jumping through, you know, the xenomorphs from Alien. We've got the living ships like Farscape. Gosh, those are the two big things. I love the star sharks. These shark-like creatures called star sharks. Not much imagination went in there, but a lot of interesting sci-fi tropes that I wouldn't say necessarily come from the brood, but it's kind of interesting that they share a commonality with other established sci-fi things that we have now.
There's no truly original anything anymore. So.
Oh, no. Nope. I would agree with that 100%.
All right. Thank you for informing us, enlightening us on the brood, Mr. Brad.
You are quite welcome.
Keep those comic book aliens coming. I like that.
Absolutely.
All right, time for picks, my friends. Picks. These are related things that we've either watched or listened to or read or etc. And I'm going to go ahead and do mine first. Are you guys a fan of the Sliders TV show?
I've not seen it.
I have watched... I definitely watched the first episode, and I've seen intermittent episodes after that.
Okay. The premise of the show is Quinn Mallory, the main protagonist, played by... Oh, what's his name? He was in Stand By Me as the fat kid on Stand By Me.
He was in My Secret Identity, which was one of my favorite 90s shows.
Yeah, please Google that so we can all know. Anyways, he comes up, or he creates, or he's like a really
Jerry O'Connell.
Jerry O'Connell, thank you. He is a scientist. He's very smart, and he discovers by accident almost a way to travel from parallel universe to parallel universe, and it's called sliding. And he takes a bunch of people with him, and they can't get home. They don't have. It's kind of like. See, it's your fault, Brad. I can't think of things now. Yeah, it's catchy. It's almost like Quantum Leap, where they can't find their home planet. Because there's many Earths. They go from Earth to Earth to Earth to Earth to Earth. All a little bit different.
They're dimension hopping.
Yeah, there's the Nazi Earth, the Earth that's a desert planet. You know, there's countless varieties of different universes. Anyways, they can't get home. But the episode that I watched for my recommendation, my pick this week, is an episode called Invasion. As you can tell, it deals with an invasion of what you first think are aliens. But it turns out they're actually Cro-Magnons. They're called Cro-Mags. That was a early form of not humans, not Homo sapiens, but an early form of apes that evolved into what could have been, and in this case, they developed intelligence, and they developed an ability to control their sliding. And they're going from universe to universe, Earth to Earth, basically taking over, enslaving people, and taking their resources. So that's the episode that I watched. It's pretty good, and it's... The Cro-Mags come back later on in other episodes of Sliders. So I would recommend watching Sliders. It's available on Netflix, and of course we'll have the link on our picks page as well at galacticnetcasts.com. Another way to support the network. So Sliders, Invasion, Season 2, great actors. You have the girl that eventually went on to be in... Sports Night. I forget that actress's name. And then there's the guy that played on which Indiana Jones film?
John Rhys Davies. He was in the first one.
Yeah, John Rhys Davies. He's awesome.
But he was in the first one and third one, or first one and second
First and second, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's great. The whole
Indy, my friend.
Yeah. The whole cast is great. There's the guy that plays the singer. I forget the
character. Wasn't he Gimli?
Yes.
Okay.
Son
of Glenn.
So Sliders. That's my pick. Anessa.
Whoop, whoop.
You're up.
My recommendation is Lord of the Rings. My recommendation or my pick for tonight is Strangelets with a Side of Grilled Spam by Michael Angel. It's after I actually read this short story. He actually has like a little series of basically there was this invasion and it started with the Large Hadron Collider.
Uh-oh.
Something caused this rift to open, and the vibration that was basically produced by the experiments attracted an alien life form to come through and invade Earth.
Through a rift that they created in the Large Hadron Collider?
I think the rift was created from it, but it wasn't created, like, at that site,
okay.
I don't believe.
All right.
I'm not entirely sure there. And, apparently he's got, like, episodes, and so... maybe at some point I will check out the other books, but the short story that I read is about 29, 30 pages long, so it's not that long. And these creatures that come across, they basically eat people.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah, so the world population, of course, is decreasing, and like there's loss of communications because there was this big, I guess, maybe not power surge, but magnetic surge or something when this happened, which basically knocked out and fried the vast majority of electronics unless they happened to have been in, like, some, like, well-sealed bunker or whatever. So there's not a whole lot of radios out there, and vehicle engines and whatnot have kind of fried. So just think the apocalypse, I guess, or post-apocalyptic world. People trying to survive these things that they call steelies. And apparently there's different types of steelies. There's some that burrow, and I guess just depending on where exactly they're located. But the ones that these three characters initially encounter in the book or in the story are described as resembling big predatory cats like jaguars. And the jaguars are draped in silver-plated chainmail. So it's really tough to kill these guys unless you hit them in just the right spot. Because they're also described as... let's see. It goes, Steelies had flesh, soft patches at the throat, the groin, and the eyes. Otherwise, they had the hide of a battleship and the constitution of a vending machine.
That's some great descriptive words.
So maybe I'll read some more about the Steelies and I'll use them as a pick or something. And apparently they were fast. And initially these guys are trying to get away and they're driving this Humvee. They manage to salvage parts and get this thing going. And they come across a settlement. And they discover... Well, the three people... you have two of them that were... they used to be in the military, and then one of them's a professor. And the two that were in the military... one's driving, and the other one's basically in the back with... machine gun aiming for these big creatures, and they come across the settlement, but before they do that, to try to get away, they have like this boost thing installed in the Humvee, and apparently that really gets the Steelies going, because they dig that frequency, so it gets them even more pumped trying to catch these people. But they eventually manage to get away. And then they start learning a bit more about like the settlement and whatnot, like what else has been going on, because they've basically been going from one place to another. And it's actually not a bad read. It's got a nice pace to it, so I would be interested in checking out the other episodes, or at least another one, just to see how it goes. But
so it's neat. Yeah. It's neat that it's almost like episodic, like it's not just one short story, it's a number of them, and just can keep on going, you know?
Right, and I don't know exactly how long the other stories are, because like I said, this one's about 29 pages, and I don't know if this just started out as he had this idea for a short story and decided to just go from there, or... actually, no, the other pages, it doesn't look like they're short. Like, the first episode's like 434 pages in print. So it just seems like maybe this one might be like a little teaser or prologue or something to these.
Or he got inspired. You know, he tried it out with this short story and thought, hey, I could make an entire book out of this.
Right. Or maybe he had the idea for the stories and had already written them out, but just kind of like... fish this to the publisher, like, hey, what do you think about this? Yeah. And they're like, well, okay, maybe.
Cool.
So I don't know how that sort of thing works, but if you want like a small sampling, and then at the end they actually give you like a small sample from the first episode, which I didn't get around to reading, so you can kind of see how that goes and if you still want to continue reading the series. So but yeah, I dig the little short story, and I don't want to give much else away, because then that just kind of ruins the fun.
All right. Good job, Anessa. Thank you for enlightening us on another short story.
Yay!
And Brad is not being his typical self with his pick.
I know. I'm being a rebel this time around. I actually went with a book.
I dig the name Aspirin.
Brad.
Mind blown, I know.
Mind blown.
Robert Aspirin is the writer. He has since passed on. But the book is Fool's Company. It's the first book out of the Fool series. This really kind of sets up the universe. It takes place in the future. The main character is Willard Jester. I'm sorry, Willard Fool, P-H-U-L-E. And he is the son of a munitions magnate in this universe. The Foolproof Munitions Company.
Huh.
His son has lived in his father's shadow and decides to join the Space Legion. And when you're in the Space Legion, you take an entirely different name. So he takes the name Jester, Fool Jester. And he sort of works his way up the ranks, as it were. But he makes a colossal error one day, and he ends up being court-martialed, but because his father is who he is and can, you know, cut off their munitions supply, they just end up exiling him to take care of a regiment of – it's where they send the rejects, the people that don't do well in military life.
The Island of Misfit Toys.
Pretty much. And this group is called – it's nicknamed the Omega Mob.
Yeah.
So you find out that now Captain Jester tries to apply, and he's a good decent person. He is mega wealthy. In fact, he's so wealthy he's the only Space Legionnaire to have his own butler, his butler Beaker. And actually, the books are written from Beaker's perspective as the butler.
Is Beaker a little animal creature?
No, he's actually I don't know how well you can see him, but he's the gentleman's gentleman in the bowler hat standing next to Captain Jester. Hmm. Think of he's kind of like a Alfred from Batman. The first book is him kind of getting involved with the group, getting the group together, and actually spending his money not in a way to gain favor, but to improve the facilities, to get them new uniforms, because they really haven't had – because they're the rejects, they get the absolute last cast-offs from the Space Legion. So he wants to improve morale, so he tries to do the best he can to bring these people around, and he actually ends up doing a bit of good. But the reason why that I made this my pick is that there are two different alien races that are in this book that they talk about. And one is the Voltan, who actually, I don't know how well you can see it, but he is this warthog-looking character here. His race only needs to sleep for a few minutes a day. So he finds him, and he's very, very intelligent, even though he's this large warthog-looking creature. People assume that he's stupid, and he is actually one of the few aliens that doesn't need a translator device to actually speak to the humans, and he's kind of proud of that fact. And he reads a lot of highbrow human books. And then there are two other characters that actually kind of look like snail-like creatures. And one is named Louis, and the other is named Spartacus. And this particular alien race has a great deal of class warfare. Louis took his name from Louis XIV? And Spartacus took his name from the warrior of literature. So, and the two of them cannot stand each other, even though they are aliens from the same race of the same planet.
Are these aliens in this unit, or are they aliens that they're fighting?
All three of those are a part of this unit.
Okay, all right.
And they are the only three aliens in this unit. I mean, they're mostly human. So, okay.
it's just one of the other challenges he needs to face is trying to get these two, Spartacus and Louis, to kind of function decently in the team when they really can't stand each other, because Louis was an aristocrat, hence the Louis the 14th reference, and Spartacus was a, you know, a thug on his planet. And they joined the Space Legion so that they wouldn't have to encounter others of their kind because they can't stand each other.
That backfired.
And it did. It backfired horribly. So anyways, I highly recommend Fool's Company. I highly recommend the second book, Fool's Paradise, where Fool's now the company has been changed from Omega Mob to Fool's Company. And in the second book, they're actually sent to protect a very large mega casino on another planet.
Are they?
I believe that there are five books in total, but I only really recommend the first two: Fool's Company and Fool's Paradise.
How did you get to know these books? How did you?
Robert Asprin actually wrote the Myth books, which is a series of very funny, tongue-in-cheek sword and sorcery fantasy books. And then I saw that he put this out in 1990, and I thought I would give it a try. And it was well worth it.
Did you just recently read it?
You know, I started to reread it again, just because I really enjoy his style of writing, even though towards the end of his life he had somebody kind of write with him or ghostwrite for him. His type of writing is interesting without being completely popcorny, you know, overly light.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good sci. He writes good sci-fi and fantasy. So,
all right,
highly recommend
cool.
it.
All right, thank you guys. To review, our picks this week were Fool's Company, Stranglets with a side of grilled spam, and Slider Season 2 Episode Invasion. And we'll have the links up on our picks page at galacticnetcast.com to pick up your own copies of all of these. All right, so before we get out of here, we almost do have to leave here because we've got the time-traveling robots in space up next. I wanted to ask you guys, are you both caught up on the latest Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes.
What did you think of this week's episode?
I liked it. I posted on Facebook that because I'm the huge comic book nerd, I was actually with Alex on Tuesday night. I had read some spoilers about it, so I kind of knew what was coming up and I knew what was going on. And my friend Carlo like texted me and he's like, "Is this so-and-so? Is this his origin story?" And I'm like, "Yeah, it is."
I didn't know anything about this character until I looked it up before the show on Wikipedia, and there he was.
Yeah, and he's my favorite Avengers villain, actually. So I hope that they do more with him in the future. That would be really cool.
Okay, one more.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah, no, they left it wide open at the end. They got to do something with him. Come on.
Yes, they did.
All right, so that's going to do it for the Alien Invasion. Don't forget you can subscribe to us on iTunes or listen to us on Stitcher Smart Radio. And for everything that we have going on, just go to galacticnetcasts.com. I redesigned the site a little bit this week. Just a minor tweak, so go over there and check it out and let us know what you think. And before we get out of here, final thoughts. We usually go Brad first, right?
Holy cow, it's me. You know, I was hoping I would have more time this week to go see Gravity, and granted that doesn't – it involves space. It doesn't involve aliens, but from what I hear, even though Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of – was upset about a few bits of the physics.
Minor things.
He said that the overall story he thought was very good, but there were some minor details, and he's very much about the details that he was not quite happy with. But
yeah, I think Stephanie and I are going to go on a date this weekend where we both go see the movie at the same time, and then we talk about it at the end. I know it's discuss.
I know, Anessa and I have done that too.
Okay. Oh, aren't we sweet? Okay. All right, Anessa, what's your final thought?
I'm just really happy to hear that gravity isn't like the open water of space.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was worried about that too.
Because I was really worried about that, and so I wasn't all that excited to see it. But then reading reviews, just from what I gather without like seeing too many spoilers or anything, it just basically sounds like there's more than just floating around in space dying.
It's a movie that I hear you should see in the theater. So if you're thinking, oh, I'm going to watch it on DVD or Blu-ray, no. Go see it in the theater. It's worth it.
So maybe. I might see it. If at the very least in the dollar theater. So.
All right. That's going to do it for this Alien Invasion podcast. Until next week, till next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
All right.
Okay, bye, Dave.
Bye.
Leave your hailing frequencies open and scanners on full, because another Galactic Netcast will be approaching your coordinates soon. For more information, go to galacticnetcasts.com.